Okay, let's put it this way. A grape by itself is permitted, okay? Don't have to worry about it. I mean, you take fresh grapes, that's what I'm talking about, okay? So you don't need anything, you know, extra to worry about. It's kosher, okay? Now, once it has been put to some kind of commercial use, then you have to be more wary of it. Okay. So raisins really require
a hefshir
on them. Right. Okay. And therefore, wine and grape juice or anything that comes out of that also requires that. For example, if you have a grape liqueur of some sort, and there are. So, you know, it has to be subject to the same rules, and it has to be under Jewish supervision and so on. Okay. So, of course, as we learned, from the moment that it begins oozing liquid, right, according to the strict view, what? That it's already subject to the laws of Yedes. I mean, we had the pros and cons, you know, about it, but nevertheless, as we saw, the tendency was to be strict in this business. Okay? Yeah. All right, so what he's saying over here, yes.
I wanted to know was why raisins were included in regard to the Nazir. Why are raisins included? In other words, did they have like the pits of grapes? There are a number of things in the Torah.
Anything that has to do with grapes is prohibited.
Okay.
As the Bible says, right?
Right. Grapes themselves. These are grapes themselves.
Right. Mishras Anovim, right? Anything which grapes are involved. Mechat Sadim Yadzak, even the skins and the pits are prohibited, okay? So certainly, I mean, raisins would fall in the same category, too. They would be prohibited to the Nazir, okay? Of course, there's another thing. He wasn't allowed to come in contact with the dead either. So that during the time that he had his Naziris, and according to the Talmud, Stam Naziris is 30 days. The person didn't specify. Of course, he could say, I want to be a Nazir for a year or 2 years or 5 years or something like that. But if he didn't specify, then he had to observe 30 days.
He also
left
his family if he was
married. It doesn't say that. No, you're thinking more of the person who is suffering, from leprosy. Right. Well, leprosy is a different story. Of course, he had to be under quarantine. Yeah.
But
yeah, I said it. Yeah, it's allowed. He had to let his hair grow. Correct. Yeah. So, there's a phrase that we have over here that we find again and again in the Talmud, namely, what do you say to a Nazir? You say, Schor Schor Lekaba, go around about the vineyard. In other words, don't get near it, right? Lo Sikrav, don't get close to it. In other words, we want to prevent temptation being put right in front of the person who could easily be tempted. So that, therefore, why do we have these prohibitions over here? The answer is because we want to make sure that people are not going to fall into error, and therefore we tell them, don't do it. Because if people think that this is permitted, then in that particular case they'll be very lax and they'll decide that other things can also be permitted, you know, to have to take it seriously or anything like that. Then this is the problem. So that's the reason why. Okay. Rabbi Yirmiyah, Iklas Safta. Rabbi Yirmiyah came to a place by the name of Safta. Safta in modern Hebrew means a grandmother, but but this happens to be a place name. Okay. Chazal Chamra, the Mazgei Evit Kechavim, the Ishta Yisrael Binei. So, this town, he saw that there was wine, which an idolater was mixing, you know, diluting, as we said, you know, preparing it to drink, and a Jew drank of it. So the osar lohu. So what did what did Rabbi Yehuda do? So he prohibited it to them, right? Why? Again, mishum lech lecha minun zero, right? Schor schor lekabel esikra. The same thing that we said before. To a Nazarite, we say go round about, don't get anywhere near the vineyard. Okay. Itbaname, we learned likewise. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. But Rabbi Yochanan said, the Ami Lord, that it wasn't Rabbi Yochanan, but it was Omer Ravasi. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Ravasi said the name of Rabbi Yochanan. All right, at any rate. Yain Shemozgu Evet Kechavim, also Mishum Lech Lech Amir Nizira Schochon Lekabel Asikra. Right. That the reason why they prohibited wine, which was diluted by the idolater, again, is for this reason. Namely, in order to make sure that people would not begin to feel that everything is permitted, and so therefore we would tell them, stay away from temptation. Resh Lakish Ikla Bavatra. Resh Lakish came to the town of Batra. Okay.
It's
Iraq today, of course. Basra, absolutely. Right, yeah. Yeah. So, right. So, at any rate, you know, geography in those days was not that clear-cut. Because part of Eretz Israel sometimes stretched into Lebanon. Yeah. And, of course, don't forget that the land on the other side of the Jordan was also part of Eretz Israel, right? So that already is not so far, I mean, because that's today Jordan. But Jordan is a neighbor to Iraq. So that being the case, there was a Jewish community in Basra, right? So,
Rabbi,
yes?
When Solomon went to get the trees out of Lebanon.
Yes.
For the temple.
Right.
Was that Israeli territory, or was he going actually?
No, he actually made a deal with Hiram Melchzor.
Ah.
Hiram, the Hiram, the king of Tyre.
Okay.
Tyre was one of the
Phoenicians?
Big cities. Yeah, with the Phoenicians, right. Right. And they had a treaty, they had an agreement, and they worked jointly in order to cut
right,
down,
no
and then
going,
right,
okay.
No, no, and then ship it down. No, as a matter of fact, he made thousands of Jews each have a month.
Yeah, I know.
Right,
that was
right.
They had
to go
that
right.
It was a mass.
It was a mass. It was a like taxation
yeah.
that was imposed upon them
yeah.
to do right. And then it resulted in glory, but also resulted in discontent, obviously. And the discontent boiled after the death of Solomon, when his son Rehoboam, or Rehoboam, you know, became king, and a lot of people were in favor of following Jeroboam or Jeroboam because they were discontent with what had taken place in Solomon's time. Okay, so at any rate, Resh Lakish happened to come to Batra, and Chazal Yisrael de Koachle Pere de Lomasre. And he saw a Jew who was eating fruit, which had not, the tithes had not been taken from it. The Asalahu. And so he prohibited them from fruits, eating fruit. Chazal Maya, then he saw water. The Sagdan who Evti Kochavim, that idolaters were bowing to it. Remember we said that, you know, they bowed to all kinds of things? So he saw that they were bowing to this water. The Shasu Yisrael, and a Jew came and he drank it. The Yasaluhu, and he prohibited them too, to the Jews. also to come into Rabbi Yochanan. Then he came back to Rabbi Yochanan, and Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says to him, Ad miktuchech olach, zil hader, says to him, don't take off your coat, he says. As long as Rashi says, you know, as long as your begotam is still on, in other words, you're still dressed, came back from a trip, you go right back again and tell them that what? That it was permitted, right? That what they did was permitted. Why? He says, because Betzer lav hainu batzra, umayim shel rabim ein nesorin. Okay. So what is Rabbi Yochanan telling Reish Lakish? Why to go back? He tells him, because first of all, you mistook a town called Betzer for Batzra. Betzer is a town in, on the other side of the Jordan River. It was a Jewish town. I don't know if you remember that Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to have 6 cities of refuge, right? 3 on the west of the Jordan and 3 east of the Jordan, and equally spaced. It's Gemara and Marcus that we learned a long, long time ago, okay? And if a person committed manslaughter, right?
They
were cities of refuge, so that the Goel Hadam, the blood of venture, you know, was not allowed to harm him as long as he had sanctuary in these places, okay? So one of the towns which was a city of refuge was Betzer. Now, naturally, that's an Israeli town. It's a Jewish town, okay? So he says, you mistook Betzer for Batzra. If Ataka was Betzer, then you're right. But, you know, you're not allowed to eat fruit grown in Eretz Israel unless you take tithes from it. I mean, this is applied to this very day. We still do that. Okay, to take mitzvahs, trumas of mitzvahs to take. Okay? But on the other hand, Batzra was not Eretz Yisrael, and there the law doesn't apply. So he wasn't doing anything. How about the water? He says, Mayim shall rabim ein nesorim. The water that belongs to the community can never be prohibited. And the fact that the person, you know, an idolater is buying down to the water, but that doesn't make the water an object of worship, even though he did worship it. In other words, it is not prohibited to a Jew. We had that way, way back also, about water, about the mountains, and things like that. Okay?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Not allowed to, that it belongs to everybody, and that cannot be subject to what they deserve. Okay? Yes. Yeah, well, that's why it says, why we shall rob you. In other words, this is water that belongs to everybody, not private water, as we'll see. So we'll continue this next week, okay? We're down to the bottom of Nun Ches. Right, right. And we'll continue next week from this point.
Did he make Reish Lakish go back to class?
Okay, today is the 14th of March. The year 2000.
314.
Yeah,
five.
314,
know
right.
About
right.
3.14.
Okay.
Oh,
I see. Okay.
Tomorrow, the idea.
No, the 15th.
Tomorrow.
What's today? Today's the 15th. Don't mind me. My mind is. It's a little confused at the moment, okay? Hopefully it'll clear up a little bit.
That's all right. It's not the most important thing to
do. Right. Okay. we didn't identify the year. It's the year 2007. Tufshin's Samach Zayin. Okay. And, all right, we have three more words left on Nun Ches Omid Beis, so I'll do them orally. Rabbi Yochanan Letame says that Rabbi Yochanan is following his own reasoning. Okay, so what is his own reasoning? So this we continue now on the next page. Nun Ches Omid Aleph, page 59a. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now they quote, you know, what did Rabbi Yochanan say that previously that we know that he's following his own system. Okay, he said, "Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadok." He said, "In the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadok." And notice again, I mean, that in the Gemara, people are always, when they give an opinion, if they've heard it from somebody previously, then they cite it, because as we read in the Megillah of the Vesta, you know, that the Tomer Esther Lebelt B'Shem Mordechai, that Esther told King Ahasuerus about the plot against his life, and she said that this was revealed by Mordechai. And therefore our sages say, both in the Gemara and Megillah, but also in Pirkei Avos, where they also cited that, if a person says something in the name of the person who actually said it, then he brings redemption to the world. So, it's an important principle to remember.
What does it mean that it brings redemption to the world?
Well, in the case of Mordechai and Esther, right, they brought about the redemption of Purim, you know. Right, the Geula, okay. But we could all do our share in trying to bring about a future Geula.
Right, instead of the negative thing that I was thinking, that it prevents you from plagiarizing somebody.
Well, that's an idea, right? It's also, yeah. I mean, you're allowed to quote other people,
right,
but give them credit for it. Right, of course.
I thought of it as, as a lawyer, that you're citing precedent. In other words, Shimon, Rav Shimon said was important, everybody thought this was a very important idea, that when you cite it, cite him as the authority, it sort of gives credence to your argument.
Sure.
But it also is a legal matter in writing,
right,
that you don't plagiarize. You quote someone, you've got to tell the authority.
Right, exactly.
The original academic.
That's an interesting thing. That's an interesting thing, and I'm wasting my time. In the academic world, the plagiarism is like the greatest shanda in the world. I'm not sure that that's a legal violation if you plagiarize. I don't know the answer.
I think
copyright is one thing, but if you plagiarize, that's, I'm not sure.
You don't know if there are legal
They may not be legal, but certainly in some cases there definitely have been ramifications, and people have also sued on that basis.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you steal,
right,
if you steal and you can sue, so there's got to be some legal.
I don't know if you can sue. You have people that have sued for others not getting attributing what they wrote.
Yeah, right. Or in other cases, people have had their political career injured, no question at all. I mean, because then, right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. In the Gemara, it gives people a hint when you say who said
right.
Because if it was Hillel,
if it was a more lenient rabbi, said it, you'd already have, you know where that person was going to.
Well, attribution.
Right. Okay. Well, it's important. Exactly. All right. So Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Tzadok. And what did he say? He said, "Mayim shel rabim ein esorim." All right. That water that belongs to the community can never be prohibited. But Hode Yochid Nesorin, if it is water that belongs privately to someone, then it can be prohibited. So that therefore, if the person bowed down to the water, as we said, right, as a form of idolatry, then if it's water that belongs to everybody, then according to Rabbi Yochanan, That doesn't mean a darn thing, okay? It's ein neso, and the water has not become prohibited. And this is why he told Reish Lakish, you go back and tell them that, you know, that they can drink that water over there. And so, even though the guy bowed down to it, okay? And on the other hand, if it's water that belongs to an individual, that's already a different story. Okay. Reciprocally, the Chubar. So now they ask the following question. Why couldn't he have learned the same idea, you know, namely that the water was not prohibited by virtue of the fact that the water is connected to the soil? And what do we have way, way back? That if you have something attached to the soil, then that cannot become prohibited. Even though, you know, an idolater is going to bite out of it, okay? So why didn't they advance that article, argument, instead of, you know, talking about the Mayim Shel Rabim, you know, and so on. So he says, Lord Tzricha, he says, you need it only in the following case. The Talshinhu Gala, that, let's say, a sudden wave came along and simply swept away the water so that it was now no longer attached to the main body of water, but it was separate. And that was the one, that little water that had been separated. This is what the guy bowed down to. It's a little far-fetched, I will agree. But nevertheless, for the sake of argument, you can see how they carry these things, you know. So they say self. Okay, if that's the case, finally he says Abde Har Shadidalbanu Ninhu, right? Why can't we make a comparison to stones of a mountain that suddenly became detached because of the fact, you know, of weathering, erosion, whatever it may be, so that it's no longer part of the original, but you know, it's rolled off. And about that, actually, we had that also quite a few pages back in the Gemara, and we saw that they really didn't resolve the issue at that particular point as to whether if somebody then came along and bowed down to the stone, right? Whether that stone is now prohibited as an object of idol worship or not. So they see the parallel with this water to the business of the stones, right? So Tistayim, the Rabbi Yochanan, so they say, okay, so let's figure it out. Maybe this is in accordance with another opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. The Omar, who said, Asuras, they are prohibited. Why are they prohibited? He says, Lo tzricho t'tapchin hu b'yodei. He says, we need the prohibition because maybe he gave a patch with his hand, the water became detached, and this is what happened. But if he had not done anything, you understand? Simply it had happened by itself, then in that case it would be all right. This is the point that they're trying to make over here. So, yeah, right. Oh,
sorry,
yeah.
I'm confused now.
Yeah.
I know that if it's a water, that's the distinction between water of the community and water,
right,
that's private.
Right, right.
If, and then they're saying that the water that's attached is also mutar, right? Am I correct? The water that...
It depends, I mean, according to his argument over here.
Okay, I guess
if it happened by itself,
right,
it would not necessarily. But if Biyode, he did it with his hand, in other words, there was action on the part of the idolater, then he took it with his hand, and And they took some water and then bowed down to it. Then in that particular case, it's no longer part of the body of water.
The pot that he bowed
right,
down to.
Right.
The pot that he took with his hand.
Right.
Wait,
how would he take it with his hand? Is that what your question is?
No, well, I guess I lost something.
In other words, there's now human action that's also involved.
If the water is the water is like connected to the land, it's mutar.
Yes.
And if it's if a wave comes along and pushes it to another place, it's also.
So at first he said it's also it's prohibited.
Right.
But then, sort of like on reflection, the question is whether it happened deliberately, or simply by itself it happened.
And if the idolater takes it by his hand and moves it, it's one.
Then in that particular case, the water that he pushed aside, that he moved, then that's considered no longer being part of the main body of water. So it's now Mayim the Yochid, instead of being Mayim the Rabbim. Okay? It's now water of the other
part.
Right.
On a practical matter, I can't picture what he means by pushing the water. He can scoop up a little bit of water.
He scooped, and then he bowed down to it. That's what we have to assume. Well, it doesn't say necessarily about drinking, although that was the original business that we had on the previous page, with when Reb Shlokas saw that the people in Batsma were drinking the water. Right. Yeah.
Well, it actually means using his hand.
I understand what you're saying. Why would somebody do that?
Why would anybody want to drink? Well, let him bow down to it, but why would anybody want to drink it? You know.
Right.
I mean, that little bit of water, when there's all the rest of it still there.
Right. Well, you know, in the book of Judges, there's a famous passage about Gideon. Gideon. That he needed volunteers in order to go to fight against the Midianites. And he didn't want to have people, you know, who were faint-hearted and so on and so forth. So he got them down to a brook and he watched to see what they did. I don't know if you remember. If they cupped it with their hands, so it means these are a bunch of sissies. They're not fit. Actually, what he said is that it means that they're used to going on their knees in order to bow down to Baal, and therefore they're no good. Okay. But those who simply lay flat on the water and they drank just like that, so those are the ones that he chose because he knew that they were tough and they would be good fighters. So
they also have to pull up a sapling, or am I mixing up a story? Just the brook.
Right, the brook.
No, but we did study about the tree, whether the tree is attached to the ground or not.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, or whether it was something that. A branch or whatever that they could.
I understand.
Right.
We had a while back.
Right,
I mentioned that a little while ago.
Yes. It's amazing how some of these things that we had so long ago suddenly they come into play again. Right. Yeah. Okay. So, now we have another story. Radechir Bar Abba, Ikla Legavla, came to a place called Gaval, something like that. Okay. Not Gavald, but Gaval. Okay. Chosam ben Oshitzwell, so what did he see over there? He saw Jewish women, the Ma'abirin, who became pregnant, me'ovdei kerkovim, from idolaters, shemolu v'leitovlu. And these idolaters had been circumcised, but they had not gone into the mikveh. And what did we learn?
You have to do both.
You have to do both in order to be Megayer completely, right? Okay. So, he saw that they had only been circumcised, but that they had never gone into the mikveh. What else did he see besides Jewish women who, I suppose they were married to these idolaters, but at any rate, it wouldn't make any difference whether they were or they weren't married to them. Okay. And what else did he say? He says, Chazal Chabro, he saw wine, the Moskow of the Kachavim, Mishosh Yisrael. This wine was diluted. Remember, we talked about that last week, that they had to dilute wine with water in order to make it potable, right? So you saw that the Oivdei Kechavim, that the idolaters were doing the mixing, and the Jews were drinking.
Maybe this place was Gebal.
Huh?
It wasn't Gebal.
Gebal, yeah, right, right. Right. So he saw these things. But even though he saw these things, the Gemara says, there's one more thing I left out. I left out a sentence. Okay. Then he saw that Tormusa is a kind of a bean or something or other. In English, they translate it as a lupin, L-U-P-I-N, whatever it is. I think.
Lupin
is a
wolf. Huh? Yeah, that's lupin a wolf. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, good.
Well. In this case, it's not. It's the name of a bean. What I think is that it's something, I don't know, do you remember when you were a kid that they used to have what they called bub and nahit?
Yeah.
Yeah. The nahit was the chickpeas. But what was the bub?
That was the chickpeas. Wasn't it?
The bub was big ones. Right, right. Big ones. So this is what I think this was. Because that requires already a great deal more cooking than the chickpeas does.
And the fathers were common to that area of Babylon.
Right.
Translation.
Yeah.
Somebody translate this.
Well, you just got it.
Bub were very big, like this, hard. And you cooked them and then you ate them. It's an option.
Bub, what was this called? What was the name of this altogether? Bub?
Nahit is the chickpeas.
Okay.
Right.
Didn't we also?
Also, I mean, also when you have a party or something like that, you always serve bub and nahit.
But for some reason, I also connected with that hot stuff.
Did that come at the same time?
It's a new generation. They don't know about bub and nahit.
All right.
You're too young.
So, at any rate, this is what I think it is.
Okay.
It's a hard bean, a large bean, a hard one, and requires a great deal of cooking. Okay. So, what was the problem over here? The problem is that it was goyim, you know, idolaters who were doing the cooking, and but the Jews were eating it. So we saw all these things. He didn't say anything. All right. So afterwards, right? Also, the Kami to Rabbi Yochanan. So he came and he reported to Rabbi Yochanan. Okay. Don't forget, Rabbi Yochanan was the outstanding teacher in Eretz Israel in his generation. So you see, Reish Lakish reported to him, right? And this particular case, it was Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba who reported to him, and so on and so forth, you know, what he saw. So, Omar Lay, so what did Rabbi Yochanan say to him? He said to him, Sevi hachreis al b'deihim sheheim mamzerim. He says, go and make a proclamation that the children of these idolaters who had not, you know, completed their gerus, that they are mamzerim. They are yenon, and as far as their wine is concerned, that we said before, you know, that they were mixing the wine with water, right? It's mishum yainesach. Declare that it is yainesach. The altumusim, and as far as the, you know, the beans that we're talking about, it's mishum bishulayev dekachovim. Says, tell them that this is food which is being cooked by idolaters. What did we learn about Bishul Akub a long time ago? We learned that it's prohibited. That a Jew has to actually be involved in some way or other in the cooking process for it to be Bishul Yisrael. Right.
But
I have a question about the first category.
Yes.
I thought that Mamzerim was only the child of adultery.
You're 100% right. In other words, in this case, the halacha does not follow what Rabbi Yochanan had to say. It's absolutely right. Mamzer is only a result of an incestuous union. Okay. Well, of course, unfortunately.
Incestuous union? Adulterous.
Adulterous.
You said incestuous.
Whatever. I meant the whole stream over there.
Yeah,
okay.
That includes
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
It
includes all of that. Unfortunately, it also includes. It also includes if a woman does not get a get, and let's say she remarries or something like that, and then she has children, so those children technically are also mamzer, because if she didn't get the get, she was never divorced.
Okay,
no,
wait.
That's a big problem.
Right. Waste more
right.
time. I'm
right.
afraid of wasting
yes.
everybody's time. Brother and a sister have relations, and they produce a child. Is
right.
that out of mamzer?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, it's not royals, absolutely. You know.
All right, so it isn't just a married woman and a married man.
That's correct.
It's
more
than
that. Applies
more
to the right. To the list of the royals, anything of those prohibited marriage.
Right.
Right. Right.
Any prohibited union.
Right. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, if that's not involved, then simply the fact that, for example, a Jewish woman marries a goy and she has children, then if they're not mamzerim, they're Jewish. Right. I mean, this we know. There's plenty of examples in our own community, I'm sure.
So in this case, Rabbi Yochanan is being very angry and strict.
You're right. That's exactly what it is. Okay.
Because even Ezra never said that the people were Mamzerim. Do you remember? Ezra comes to...
Yeah, but Ezra forced the men, you know, to divorce their non-Jewish wives.
Yes, but he never,
right.
assuming they had children,
right.
he never declared them...
No, he didn't declare them Mamzerim, but he said that they were doing a bad thing and that they were training their kids to become idolaters and so on and so forth.
What was
right.
the
status of
the kinder?
The children. The Goyish mothers were encouraging the children to grow up as Goyim, not as Jews. That's
but
the point.
They would have been
right.
technically not Jews anyway.
No, that's correct. They're not.
They were technically not Jews.
That's right.
Did
right.
the father claim the children and have them
right.
converted or whatever?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
everybody
it's always possible to convert.
Go to the mikveh and be circumcised.
Yeah, right, right, right. Yeah, I mean, we have this situation today, I mean, that you have boys and girls, you know, once they reach the age of puberty, then even though, let's say, in the case of a boy, he may have had a bris when he was born to a non-Jewish mother, and he had the bris, sort of odd condition, they call it Alpidas Beis Din, okay, according to the permission of the Beis Din to circumcise his child. But when they reach puberty, they have to make a decision as to whether they want to remain Jewish or not. This is what the situation is.
So is the mikveh done when they reach Bar Mitzvah or at
At some before Bar Mitzvah. Yeah.
But not as a baby.
Not a baby, no. Although, it's not that it's impossible. It could be done with a baby, too. I've seen, I mean, I've seen over here in Springfield also.
Then would they do adoptions?
Yeah, with the adoption, exactly. That's where I've seen it done, right. You know, they took a non-Jewish child, made that child Jewish by that virtue, right? Correct. And, you know, the mother simply held the child, dipped the child in the mikveh and so on. That's exactly what happened. Okay. So, all right. So, at any rate, we see that Rabbi Yochanan is reading the Riot Act, right? And the question is, why? So the answer that they give is, Bishum she'enon b'nei Torah. Basic reason is because the people in Gaval don't know what the Torah has to say. And therefore, they don't know that these things are prohibited. And that's why he wants to scare them, obviously, that they should not continue this way in order to bring them back, you know, to keeping Yiddishkeit the way it's supposed to be kept. And, okay, Al B'nayim, and they say, why did he say the children, you know, Shehem Amzerim, right? So it says, Rabbi Yochanan Tame, he followed his own opinion in this case, the other Rabbi Yochanan, as they quote now Rabbi Yochanan, in the Gemara in Yevamos, where it says, the Olam Eino Ger, he never is fully a convert, right? Ad sheyimol v'yitmol, right, until he is both circumcised and he immerses himself in the mikvah. The kevod alei tovil, and inasmuch as he did not immerse himself, so therefore oyved kechavim hu, so he is still an idolater. Okay. The Omer Rabbi Barachana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Barachana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, quoted him, right? Oved Kechovim, the Eved, whether he's an idolater or whether he is a Canaanite slave who has not been converted fully, right? Habor al Bas Yisrael, who has intercourse with a Jewish girl, Jewish woman, Havlad Mamzer, right? Then the child is a Mamzer. As I said, this is his opinion. But that's what it says, the Tameh. He wanted to make sure that they would not be encouraged to carry on anything like that, and that's why he declared them that they're Mamzer, okay? But in reality, according to Halacha, they were not, okay?
For the child.
Of course. Problem with the mom.
The rabbinic authority now, whether his halakhas were correct or not.
Right.
You know, there'd be so much confusion as to his status.
Yeah, well, you're right. It helps, right.
It'd be a forever thing.
It's a forever thing.
Right. Yeah.
To correct that person.
Right.
I mean, what was his? It's interesting now. You ask this. What is his purpose to deter future marriages of this sort?
Yes.
Because even if the kohavim were to go in on mikvah, that would not redeem the child, so to speak. The child would still be a monster, right?
Yeah, he doesn't talk about the retroactive aspect of it.
No.
Primarily, it's because he wants to make sure, you know, that it won't happen. Now that's why he's being very, very strict.
In case where, for the common good of Judaism,
right,
you wouldn't want to encourage these relationships, but it may do serious harm to.
Yeah. Look, it's a problem that we have to this day, you know, that there are rabbinic authorities, you know, who will be more lenient, and others who feel that leniency is harmful to Judaism, and so they're stricter even, you know, than what the law itself demands, or something like that. Unfortunately.
Somewhere it rings a bell. That it's forbidden to be stricter than, you know, than the law. Wouldn't it say someplace?
Well, not necessarily, but you know, people certainly have that feeling, including you know, great rabbis who also felt that it's easier to be strict than it is to write. It's a difficult position, you know, very difficult. Because you have a situation in the community where things are going downhill, And what can you do in order to stop this downhill trend? I mean, the situation that existed when he came to Gabla over there is a situation that could be repeated in America today.
I mean, I don't see the situation today. It's just as threatening.
Right.
I mean, the figures speak for themselves.
Yeah. Okay, what about the second thing that he saw over there? The Gozerad Yedam, and why did he say that the wine that they were mixing, that's Mishum Yei Nesach, he says it declared it was Yei Nesach. That's also in order to prevent a bad situation. Mishum, because Lech Lecha or Lech Lech Abinan Nizira Schor Schor Lekabel Sikra. We had that last week as well, where in order to make sure that people would not fall into a situation where they commit something wrong, therefore we tell them to be careful and avoid any such situation. Tactically, if you remember what it says, we say to the Nazarite, go around, don't get anywhere near the grapevine. Yes. The altar motion. All right. Now how about the bub that we were talking about? All right. The beans. It says. What about these beans and so on? So he says that he declared that it was bishul akum. Right. It was cooked by a goy and therefore not to be eaten by a Jew. He said. Lefishan on B'nai Torah, right? So again, what reason did he give? He gave the reason that these people are not learned, they don't know what the laws are, and therefore they'll take liberties and do things that are definitely prohibited, even if this by itself is not really a strictly prohibited action. Because it's possible, you know, that somebody, maybe there was a Jew in the background who was, but he was afraid that he would encourage laxity in observance. So therefore he used this terminology. So the Gemara says, right, Lefi Sheinun B'nei Torah. Yeah, that's what we just said, right? Because they're not B'nei Torah. So it says, Tamo. Then your reasoning is the Inan B'nai Torah, right? That they are prohibited because they don't know the laws, right? They're not Torah scholars or B'nai Torah, but if they were Torah scholars and they knew these things, then what? Then surely it would be permitted, right? Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, but Rav Shmuel, the son of Rav Yitzchak, said, Omar Rav, the name of Rav, Kol Shaneach al Kemoshe Hu Chai Ein Bo Mishum Bishulei Ovdei Kochovim. So this goes back to something again that we had a long time ago. We learned that certain things are not Bishul Akum. A food that can be eaten raw, if you remember, is not, if you do cook it, it doesn't make it Bishul Akum, even if a goy cooked it, but it doesn't become Bishul Akum. Okay? You know, vegetables and things like that, because these things, as we said, they did not go Al Shulchan Melachim. Remember that phrase? That they would not be served
on the royal table.
Right. Right, yeah. Al Shulchan Melachim. So...
Wow, that was really early
right.
In
lovely. So is it part of the idea that you could go and eat
the
cold salad if
it's
served cold food?
Yeah, well, cold salad or something like that.
Beans
right.
Beans have to cook a long time.
Yeah,
the beans are not
that
American
they
out,
do.
But
right.
Something like they have fruits.
Yeah, but let's say peas. All right, you can take a pea out of the pot and eat it.
Yeah.
You don't have to cook it. And if you cook the peas, if the goy cooked peas, That's still okay.
Well, what about
that's
the
idea.
That
well, that's already a different problem. Right now, we're only talking about the cooking process. Right, paper plates, plastic cutlery.
They serve you paper plates with no garnish.
Right.
Else
yeah. Okay. So anyway, right. So this is what was said by Rav Shmuel by Rav Yitzchak in the name of Rav. That's called Shneichal Kibosh Chai. Something can be eaten when it's raw. Ain bo bishum v'li oydei kechavim. Right. Rabbi Yochanan ke'ach lishto sevalei, but Rabbi Yochanan interpreted that to mean the Amar Rav Shmuel, Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rav, kol she'ino ela l'shulchan melachim, the lapis bo's hapas ein bo shum b'shulayachim. What I said a moment ago, that if it's not the kind of a food that would grace a royal table, then in that particular case, it is not considered Bishulei Akum. But how about Tama Deinam B'nei Torah? How about coming back to the fact that he says that he prohibits it because they are not Torah scholars? So, B'nei Torah Shore? So, would it be okay if they were Torah scholars? Would he then issue the same prohibition or not? It's up in the air. That's a good question. Okay. They don't really solve the question.
All right.
I think I'm going to stop at this point right now.
You don't want another
yes.
Chance.
Okay. All right. Tonight is the 21st in the month of March, in the year 2007. We're already in Chodesh Nissan. Pesach is around the corner. And we have to get ready. So, at any rate, we are continuing now in Gemara Avodah Zarah, Nun Tes Amud Aleph at the bottom of the page, 59a, three lines from the bottom. Okay? And we see the problem that was discussed in the last few stories that they related over here is if the people in the community are not B'nai Torah, in other words, are not versed in the law, then the feeling was that you had to be more strict in order to make sure that they don't decide that if you're lenient, then they're permitted to do whatever they feel like it, and it's okay, you see. So we pointed out in the past, unfortunately, this was one of the major problems with the reform movement. I mean, that they decided that everybody is free to make his own decision as to what he wants to observe, what he doesn't want to observe, what is a Jew, what is not a Jew, etc., etc. And it's something that the movement has to this day. And unfortunately, it seems to be infecting the conservative movement as well, at least among some of the members of the conservative movement. All right. So, Bor Minei, this is the third line from the bottom, Bor Minei Merav Kana, they ask the following question of Rav Kana. It says, Oved Kechovim, in the case of an idolater, Mahu Sheyole Chanovim Legas, is it permitted for him to bring grapes to the threshing floor? Now notice, these are just grapes. Of course, what would be the question really that would be involved? The question would be that if, you know, so many grapes are piled up, then because of the weight, maybe what's going to happen? Right, some of the liquid is going to ooze out. So in that case, would that be creating a situation of Avodah Zarah or not? This is the question, okay? Omar Abu. So he said to the people who asked him the question, whoever it was, he said to them, Osir, it's prohibited. Why is it prohibited? Mishum, lech lecha min nazir sechor so the karmeli sikra. I mean, we had this phrase repeated again and again in the last couple of weeks, and it means again that to a Nazarite you say, go, stay away from the vineyard. In other words, don't get into a situation where you're going to be tempted to do the wrong thing. So that therefore, he says, I prohibit this situation as well, where the idolater is carrying the grapes, he says, because I don't want a situation to arise, you know, where we'll think that it's everything is okay. So, Eisave Rav Yemer Lev Kadam. So, Rav Yemer asked the following question of Rav Kadam. He said, Oyved Kechovim Shehevi Anovim Agas Bisalin Uvidudorin. It's the next page. I gotta turn the page over here. Okay. Afalpi Shehayayin Mizalef Alehen Mutar. So he quoted a Tosefta which says the following. He said, it says that an idolater who brought grapes, notice I said brought grapes, okay, to the threshing floor, and he brought them in baskets, that's Pesalim. And the next word, Uvidudorin, or in a rocking place at Udorin, are small jugs, or small jars, or something like that, okay? Right. So, Afal Pisha Yayin Mizafan Lehen, even though wine is dripping from them, but it's from the grapes, Mutar, it still is permitted. So, of course, this contradicts what was said on the previous page. It was said that it's prohibited, right? For Kahana said it's prohibited. So, they quoted it to him and said, there's a Mazokster, right? What is your opinion, since you say it's prohibited? So he says, Ana l'chapchila ka'amina. He says, well, if you ask me the question before it actually happened, I say to you, don't have to do it, okay? But it's, you know, the second, the one that they quoted, you know, the second one, what Yemer quoted, it says, Shehevi. Hevi is past tense. In other words, he already did it. So, he already did it, so I'm not going to say that it's prohibited in that particular case. In other words, we remember again, it's a case of Lefatchila, which means to begin with, no, but to the Yemer, okay, it's all right, I mean, you know, we're not going to say that it's prohibited, okay. All right. Ahu Esroga, now this is the case of an Esrog, okay. The Nofa, the Chavisa, the Chavra, okay. So, here we have a case of an Esrog, and it fell into a barrel of wine, okay. Just wondering how it would smell. Would it smell of wine or would it smell like an esrog?
It wouldn't be kosher to use for the prayers of the
probably not.
And maybe
probably not.
It's supposed, right, to be, supposed to be a perfect esrog.
Right. Yes. We're always looking for what we call hadar. In other words, beauty.
Yeah.
Beauty.
Yeah.
Okay. So, at any rate, this is what happened. So what happened? Israel Yevet Kechovim the Shaklay. So there happens to be an idolater standing by, and he saw it happen. What did he do? So he stuck his hand inside the barrel, and he pulled it out. All right. So now, of course, what is the problem?
Two things.
The barrel of wine.
All right. The barrel of wine is our question. Exactly. Okay.
He's doing a good deed.
He's
doing a good deed, right.
So, Obaluhu Rav Ashi, who happened to be standing by over there, said to them, the question is, who is to them? To them is Jewish bystanders who were there over there. And what did he say to them? He said, Naktuhu li yode ke hech de lo shashek bay. Alright, so he said, first of all, grab hold of his hand so you'll prevent him from stirring the wine. Because remember we had the other week that stirring the wine was one of the ways of Avodah Zarah, right? The Yainas. Okay. So hold his hand so that he doesn't do it. Okay? For a tzufa ad shayfa. And in addition he says, take the this barrel over here, right? And turn it on one side. I'm quoting Rashi right now, so that the wine would spill into another kli, right? So that the wine will be passed from the Oved Kochavim, from the idolater, right? And afterwards, this wine that you saved, it says, I mean, it's still quoting Rashi, right? It will be Muteris Bahanor, it will be permitted to have a benefit from it, right? And Echavis, the Cholzban, Sheyodo, Tekuva, Vayayin, Motsi Eno, he of Shalish Bo Shalish Hafik, because as long as his hand is sticking in there, and you're preventing him from stirring it. The Alpha Gafshadok is Yodo. So Bratsui says, Loshon Mate Al Tzira, turn it on its side, let's turn the barrel on its side, etc. So, okay. So, what does he say? He says, if you turn the barrel on its side, so you can try to save whatever wine you can that would pour out, because presumably, I assume he stuck his hand. It doesn't say where he stuck his hand. It doesn't say whether he stuck his hand in from the top, which I would imagine would be the most logical thing, because the eswig fell into it, so I assume that's where it fell in. I mean, the top of the barrel was open and it fell in. So, to prevent them from doing it, then you could still save the wine and get some hadar from it. It doesn't say necessarily that you're permitted to drink the wine, but at least the wine could be sold so that you don't sustain a total loss. That's the idea. Amar Rav Ashi. So, Rav Ashi said, Hi, Oyved Kechavim, the Naschei L'chamo, the Yisrael B'chaplano, he says, now, if you have the case of an idolater, who he poured a libation, right, of wine which belonged to a Jew. He took Jewish wine, and he poured a libation, B'chaplano, in other words, on purpose to do it, okay? Afal Gav, that is Vodeh Oyved Kechavim Vachrino also, even though, it says, you cannot sell it to another idolater, because you can't have, you know, once it's been actually used as a libation, it's now it's also to the Jew. And we learned that for Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to have any benefit whatever, right? So, it says, the Jew cannot have any benefit whatever from it, in this respect, that he cannot sell it to another idolater. But Shorei Lei, nevertheless, Rav Ashi gave him permission, the Mishkol Damim Ahu Avid Kochavim, to claim a loss from the idolater who had caused this whole business. In other words, he could try to get back at least some compensation, or by suing him or something. I don't know where he would sue him. Maybe bring him to the Bezdin or something like that, or to try to sue him. Once upon a time, there were what they did, you know, there were Bezdins that had authority in civil matters, not just for the Jewish community, but often also for the non-Jewish community, would also, you know, go to them. So the person, the Jew who owned the wine, which was now, he couldn't sell it, but at least he could try to claim some damage, you know, for the spoilage of this wine from the person who did it. How lucky he would be in the court of law, I can't tell you. We've all had experiences which didn't turn out so well when we tried to get what legally was coming to us, in spite of all the advertisements that you have. This lawyer promises you, I got billions for this one, and this one says, I got millions from this one, and so on. And I'm afraid it's unethical to talk sometimes. Oh, and here come the Hirschfelds. Okay. My Tama, what is the reason why they could do it? Hi, how are you? Says Mikla Kanye. It's as if it was burnt or something like that. Now, this I don't quite understand myself. Rashi has nothing to say over there at this particular point. But I guess the general idea is as though it was a fire loss or something like that. I mean, that so he could try to collect damages, you know, for having spoiled his wine, and of course the fact that he had to buy Jewish wine in order to replace the wine that he now could not sell. Omar Rav Ashi. So, as long as according to Rav Ashi, they continue with another Rav Ashi statement. Okay. Mina Amina law. What is the source that we say the Tanya that we have learned in the Baraiso, which says, Oyved Kechovim, Shenosach Yedo Shem Yisrael, Shelobif Leavidus Kechovim, also. If an idolater performs a libation with Jewish wine, right? But he's not standing in front of an idol, he's not doing it in front of an idol. And nevertheless, he says, also, it still is prohibited, right? Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, Rabbi Yehuda ben Misera, matirin, but Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, Rabbi Yehuda ben Misera, who happened to be much earlier Tanoim, so matirin, they permitted Mishum Shnei Devar for two reasons. Echot, one reason is that it's not really a libation unless it's actually in the presence of an idol. Okay? The echod. And another reason it says, the person, the Jew, you know, who was damaged because it was his wine that was taken by the idolater to make the libation. He says, you have no right, he says, that you should make my wine prohibited to me because of this onus. In other words, it's an imposition of. So, in other words, the earlier Tanoim were makel on this. In other words, they took a more lenient view. On the other hand, Rav Ashi, as we see, took a more severe view. Right. So now, another story about why. Ahi chavisa dechama, dishdake levarzo, chosev el kapovim. Okay. It was the case of, again, a barrel of wine, which was poured into a spout. Possibly what happened is, you know, that this, for some reason or other, the covering or something, the spout was open or something or other. At any rate, it started to flow, right? So also there is kachavim, idri. So a dalak came running up, anach yoda yaluye, and he put his hand on it in order to do what? and that'll disrupt the flow of the wine.
Yeah.
Okay? So the Rav Papa. So Rav Papa said, Kol Adi Barza Chabra Asir. And we go on the next page already. We're moving. This is moving time.
So intent is not really taken that much in consideration.
It is taken into consideration for a certain amount.
It is.
But not completely. Again, why? Because over here the problem is again the severity of Avodah Zarah. That's considered one of the cardinal sins, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, we find that they're very, very strict about these things. To say that the Jew cannot have any use of the wine. And as a result, you know, we learned earlier in the year that even though today we don't really have Yein Nesef, what we have is instead Stav Yeinom, in other words, wine which is produced by a goy, but not necessarily used as a libation. But still, it is prohibited to a Jew to use it, because we want to take a very strict view when it comes to this particular practice.
It doesn't seem to be like the wine doesn't seem to be too straight to their trying.
No, you're right, because there are opinions that say that are more lenient as compared to the stricter point of view. You're absolutely right.
You know because yeah. I mean, here they're talking about if the idolater takes the wine, he's
right.
making a libation,
right.
and there's no idol there.
Right.
But the intent is
the
to
intent
make a
is,
libation.
Of course, of course.
So, you know, that would follow, you know, by some of the reasoning.
Yes, but
would not be
they true. Wanted to be lenient. So they said, inasmuch as it was not in the presence of an idol, so therefore it would be permitted. You understand? But that's not the opinion of Rav Ashi, obviously. Rav Ashi says nothing doing about that. But since...
What would be the point of a libation if it wasn't in front of an idol?
Well, he was mixed up. He thought...
Well, the idolater, who knows, it suddenly fell in his mind that he wants to make a libation, even though the idol is not there. It's fault of iron and cup, as we say in French, you know. You never can tell what.
Right. I have a question.
Sure.
My logic, I'm thinking that the rabbis have been so stringent all along.
Right.
To basically build a guard around the Torah so that Jews should not be tempted in any way or get no benefit. And thinking about it, in the culture that the Jews lived in at that time, perhaps Jews didn't bring an idol into their homes, but they might be copycatting some of the practices of the idol worshippers. So they might not actually have the idol in their house for various reasons, social reasons, community reasons, whatever, but they're a little bit, they're tempted a little bit. So you would think that they would be extra strict here rather than showing.
Yeah, well, I don't know actually whether they were ever tempted to have idols in the house. This is really an interesting question that you raise, and I'm trying to think a little bit. First of all, we're living in a different culture today. I've been to Jewish homes, let's say at a time when people had to make a minyan doing Shiva, right? And there was a Buddha around over here.
but they're not as a work of art.
Right, I understand. I understand. Right. I mean, there might have been, let's say, a statue of an unclothed woman or something like that. And so you know what I mean. So I wouldn't say that the Jew who has these things in the house actually has become a Buddhist. Or a hedonist or something like that. But right. But whether that existed 2,000 years ago, that they did the same thing, I don't know. On the other hand, it's also true that, you know, there have been excavations of synagogues in Eretz Yisrael and some of the surrounding areas where they have, for example, pictures on the floor or something like that, you know, right, mosaics and so on, right, 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 I've seen them, right.
A man who did his doctorate thesis on the art
right.
of those times,
yes.
And that was actually being used,
right.
That you would find certain forms that reappear many times
right.
in sacred places even.
Right, right. I mean, the fact that it was there in as part of the synagogue structure itself, I mean.
Right, right here at the foot of Mount Gilboa, there's actually it's a kibbutz now, but they have an ancient synagogue. Is amazingly well preserved, and they have this beautiful mosaic, and they go through this whole, like, sort of semi-documentary movie, sort of fictional movie about how it came about. But, I mean, it's very clear, it's a zodiac. I mean,
But there are others, I mean, which have pictures of, for example, Arcadus Yitzchak, you know, the binding of the near sacrifice of Isaac by Abraham, and so on. I mean, they do have synagogues and the depictions and so on, right? So
it wasn't followed that closely.
Exactly. Well, I mean, in other words,
they were lenient, perhaps, as to what you might or might not
maybe,
be able to do.
Maybe
the local rabbis must have.
Right.
When you were talking about they were strict because of the temptations that were there.
Right.
But you know, I have another thought. I was thinking of greed and economics, where the Jews might be tempted to use it to sell to somebody, and they knew that it was strictly, they had to make it very strict that they could not have benefit from it.
Right.
But they might want to think, you know, gee, I don't want to waste this whole cask of wine. I'll sell it to an idolater. Let him use it. Kind of thing, but it's obviously that's where they got very strict.
Right.
I think it's that human element that the rabbis were very aware of, the idea that for economic's sake that they might be tempted, even more than the Avodah Zorah part of it. It's just in terms of human nature. I'm sorry? You agree with me?
There's no question, I mean, that they felt, you know, that a Jew had to be very careful in its contact with the idolater.
Yeah.
No question about it. We've seen it throughout this scepter here. Right.
Otherwise,
right.
People would find ways of getting around them.
Right.
Here's a contradiction, though. The very first things that we learned about the Jews that were selling merchandise to idolaters, and that if they were to go to a festival, a pagan festival, the sale could not take place, but if they were coming back, the sale could take place, because the rabbis, at least in that issue, wanted to make sure that the Jews had some sort of parnassah, some sort of livelihood.
So they allowed that. It's a certain kind of merchandise, but not when it comes to wine.
With wine, there's another aspect besides everything that you've all mentioned, including the fact that wine was used as part of pagan religion.
Right.
Okay. But wine also is something that produces conviviality.
I see. Right.
Right. So they wanted to make sure, you know, that they really wanted to try to prevent wine on this basis too, because they were afraid. I mean, even the Torah itself doesn't mention wine in this context, but you know, it talks about the fact that, you know, they come to Eretz Yisrael, that they have to be very careful that, you know, their daughters do not associate with others, that the men did not associate with Canaanite women and things like that and so on. I mean, because they were afraid of what the results of intermarriage would be. The Hishnu is Banech Me'achareh Lehehen. That's what the Torah says, that they will cause your children to literally to turn away. But you know, the word Zayna, I don't have to tell you, is also associated with prostitution, whoredom, and so on and so forth, you know, after their gods. So that being the case, I mean, this is one of the reasons, you know, why also they felt that they have to be very strict in this matter. All right, so what happened over here? The wine started to leak, right, from the barrel. So this idolater came, he ran up, he put his hand on the spout, right? And the question is, so what happens now? So this is the bottom of the previous page, you know, the Nun Tes of the days. So Rapapa said, he says, whatever wine is, they usually explain it on a level with the spout, is prohibited, because this is definitely wine that has been touched by the idolater. Remember, this is outside the barrel. He didn't stick his hand in the barrel. He stuck it outside. It's not like the previous case where he put his hands in the barrel. Okay, this is outside the barrel. But still, he says, the wine is coming out and he's putting his hand on it, right? So all the wine that's on a level like that, he says, is prohibited, right? The idach, the top of the next page, but the rest of the wine, sherry, is permissible. So far, and not only that, Rashi says, if you take a look at the top line over there, he says, Af bishasiya, it's permitted even to drink. In other words, the rest of the wine in the barrel that he didn't touch, that would be permissible even to drink. Because so far, Sadot and Lav Chibur, the Yosri, says, because he felt that the sides of the barrel or the wine that was there, it says is that you should not have to condemn the rest of the wine over there. But as Rashi points out, the less hilchasor kavose, which means what? But the halacha does not follow this lenient opinion.
Ah.
Does not follow it. And because, as we say, the Iko de Amre, and there are those who say, and the Gemara continues now, Umar Papa, right? Ad Habazo Chama Asir, the Idach Shore, this also would mean that's the same thing, that what is right up to the spout is prohibited, and the rest would be permitted, right? But as Rashi points out, this is not the way Rav Papa actually understands it afterwards, because he is projecting his own opinion, whereas the sages have a different majority opinion. And in that case, I mean, who do we follow? Do we follow Das Yochid, as we would say, the opinion of an individual, or do we have to follow the Das Rabin? You know, the opinion of the many. So again, we see this interplay. Some are lenient, others are not lenient. No question about it. Okay. So this is one of the problems that we have to face when it comes to halacha, that you can't always say yes, 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 it's permitted. You can't always do that. Right. All right, Hillel and Shabbai. But again, I mean, whether it's Hillel or Shabbai, the important thing is that they were both reflecting the spirit of the Beit HaShemayim. which we can say about every controversy, unfortunately.
Right.
Absolutely.
But they disagreed.
Exactly. Some things, you know, some of the disagreements are not too gefährlich, you know. For example, when you make Kiddush, could you say Baruch Pri HaGefen before the bracha of the Shabbos or Yontif, or at the end, just before? So, you know, basically, of course, they were the ones who decided that we do it the way we do it to this very day, that first we make the bracha over the wine, or if you have no wine, you make it over bread, or in the morning, you permit to use it over schnapps too, if you want, okay. Wine is still preferred, but, you make a l'chaim with schnapps too, so, because it's considered Sheikha Hamadina, in other words, the liquor which is drunk by, commonly drunk, okay. So the reasoning of Beis Hillel is that if you had no wine, you would not be able to do what? You wouldn't be able to make Kiddush. This is their reasoning. So therefore the blessing for wine comes first, and then comes the rest of the bracha, which, you know, concludes with Mekadesh HaShabbos, so we praise God for hallowing the Sabbath, or on Yontif, Mekadesh Yisrael HaZmanim, or Rosh Hashanah, you know, Melech HaKodes Mekadesh Yisrael V'Yomayah HaZikorin, etc. Okay, so this is the order in which we go, according to Beis Hillel. But Beis Shammai had a different opinion. They said, look, first comes, why are we making Kiddush? We're making Kiddush because it's Shabbos or it's Yom Tov, right? So therefore, we should start with that, and then wind up with the wine at the end. Make the bracha over there. So, okay. It's not an earth-shaking machlokes, right? In other words, the controversy is not so gefährlich that it's going to split jury. The fact that whether we make the bracha at the beginning, or, you know, which one comes first, you understand? You have in the Gemara Pesachim different opinions. For example, when you make Havdalah on a Yontif, you know, it happens that sometimes when you have a Yontif Shabbos, right? So you have to make Havdalah at the conclusion, right? What is the order? Wine, Psalmim, right? Or Chabadil, etc., you know. So what is the order in which you think? And they have different opinions as to which one should come first, okay? Of course, we have our definite opinion, you know, that follows, finally the accepted halacha. But differences can exist, but the question is, and then in the final analysis, what happens? And the important thing is that the machlokes between Hillel and Shammai, it should really be the Shem Shemayim, for the sake of heaven. That's what we have to always be aware of.
Well, even the differences between the practices of some cases between the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim.
Yeah, those are the questions of Minhagim, right. That's another area, of course.
Another custom that they
follow. Yeah, well, I say that's what we call Minhagim. Minhag is a custom, okay? So there are Ashkenazic minhagim, there are Sephardic minhagim, there are Yemenite minhagim, probably Moroccan minhagim, etc., right. So, you know, wherever Jews settled, they had different minhagim. But it doesn't vitiate the fact that we still have basic halacha that everybody agrees, you know, should be followed. Yeah. So these are things, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're a little bit more, and I think we'll call it a night. Okay. Omar Rav Yemar, Kitanoi. So Rav Yemar says, you know, this argument back and forth, he says, you know, there's a similar one that goes way, way back to the time of the Tanoim. Okay. And what is this all about? Okay. Chodesh Shenikba. A barrel which developed a hole in it, okay? Bein mepiha, whether it is at the mouth, literally, which means on the top, right? Uveim Mishulecho, or on the bottom, Uveim Mitzidecho, or whether on the sides. Whole developed, whether bottom, the top, on the sides, V'dogabot Tvul Yom, Tameya. Now this Tvul Yom I have to explain to you. There are certain cases where the Torah, I mean, we're talking, you know, about people who became Tomei, okay? Then they had to purify themselves, whether it's by counting a number of days, going into the mikveh, or maybe the very same day that they were able to do it, depending upon what the circumstances are. I mean, this is already a very technical area, okay? But in certain cases, they actually immerse themselves in the mikveh during the day. That's what it means to tvul yom, immersed in the daytime, right? But they were not yet tahor, because the Torah has a statement that says, Uvoa HaShemesh, when the sun sets, v'taher. Then at that particular point, they become, they become purified. Okay? So, the Tvul Yom, therefore, even though he had already immersed himself in the mikveh, but he still was in a state of tumah because it was still not sunset yet, okay? Sun hadn't set yet. So, that being the case, what happens if he touched a barrel of wine which developed a hole? Now, of course, this goes back to those days where fruits could become tomei, and if a fruit became tomei, then who could not eat it? Kohanim, right. If it was what we call, for example, let's say this was a barrel of wine which is truma. Truma has to be given to the Kohen, okay? And the Kohen has to be in a state of purity to eat it. And the food has to be in a state of purity for the Kohen to eat it, because otherwise it has to be destroyed, okay? So, if this wine happened to be destined for a Kohen to drink, then in that case, the Tvul Yom, by touching it, rendered it Tomei, and therefore it could not be consumed by a Kohen. Okay? So he says that, you know, under those circumstances, the wine in the barrel, right, becomes Tomei. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Mipiho Mishuleho Tabeo. He says, if the hole was on the top or on the bottom, then it becomes Tomei.